Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's up, everyone? This is Star Rock, and you are tuned into the AURN podcast. And I am here with my co-host.
Woo!
Who want to go first?
Yo, man, the off-mic conversations are hilarious. I'm Jay Hall, but the off-mic conversations are hilarious.
Yeah,
continue.
Y'all have to be here. But I'm Jonathan Elias, and we're super excited to have another awesome episode to share with y'all.
So, how's adulting? Because speaking of off mic,
like what it took for me to get here going. I don't know how long we got. I don't know how long we got this room reserved for.
Hey, none of us started preparing our taxes yet. Oh, that's a whole
God.
I never look forward to tax season because I always owe.
Same.
I mean, same. I said earlier that I feel like the signs of my adulthood was when summer vacation, there was no more. And when I actually had to start paying attention to my taxes and realizing I was going to do more owing than I was getting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And having a kid does nothing for any kind of incentive. You might hear that, but it doesn't. It varies, I guess. And if you are someone who has a kid or kids and gets incentives, good for you.
That's wild.
That's not my kid. That's not my wild situation.
Mm. Yeah, but I've been like a real godfather and the uncle, and I've been like playing a role where I did not put them on my taxes, but I be seeing people who didn't even do half of what I did, and they're actually fathers. I feel like I could have went back and put my niece on there somehow. You know what I mean? Like, I could have went back there and put my godson on there, you know, and my goddaughter. I could have claimed
about,
somebody.
About my time working at that tax company. I'm not going to say the name, but that popular tax company.
Were you in the Bronx?
I was in the Bronx.
In the Bronx at that.
I was a receptionist. Sheesh. And people were coming in on all kinds of foolishness because somebody that hasn't seen their kid in years going to file them for, what is the dependent? And yeah, they'll come in like cursing me out. And I'm like, I didn't do nothing. I just check you in and you talk to your tax providers back there. Okay. So that was interesting.
I mean, it's a real thing. I mean, Uncle Sam is the only person who will still come get your money after you're dead.
And charge you interest. Wild.
Yes.
That's wild.
Mm. Like, yo, you better look. I don't know who my daddy is, yo. Because right? I'm pretty sure he ain't pay taxes. What? I'm just saying.
I'm all like, right?
Okay. I mean, I know who he is. Just don't know where he at.
I know what you mean.
It's just what it is.
I know what you mean.
But no, the taxes thing is a very serious thing. And you know, you start to pay attention as an adult, and you really should. I'm not good at doing TurboTax, people who be doing their own taxes, because sometimes I don't remember what I've done.
I can't.
I could never.
I can't. Do you guys have any words of advice for anything, for anybody out there about taxes?
Pay them.
I was going to say, yeah, if you're like 1099 massive, like we are the 1099s, mm-hmm, pay quarterly.
Yes,
but
yes.
You know what? I tried to pay quarterly, and the freaking IRS website wasn't even working.
You just shot down your own device, Star.
So that's why I said, but you know what? Because actually, never mind. Look into it, though. Definitely find the tax person that you can have a relationship with that you can talk to throughout the year, and they'll give you some good advice for how to put money away. They'll probably tell you to pay quarterly, but like I tried to. It didn't work. This was last year, so I don't know. You know, things might change, but definitely establish a relationship with a tax person, someone who works with people that work in your same industry. Yeah, my tax guy deals with a lot of people who have 1099s and W-4s, I think is the other one that's like the independent contractors. Make sure you have a tax person that understands what you do in your industry and how you can potentially get things written off.
I say no more. Don't do hookups when it comes to the government. I get it. You're watching your friends do things, and they're maneuvering, and they're getting by. You're watching your auntie pull up with a brand new Lexus. But trust me, the government is that individual that sits back and just watch your bubble blow, right? And if they got to come get you when you dead, dumb, and blind, they always, always come get their bread. So when it comes to the government, I don't go to no, like, hookup. I don't go to no, like, uncle who knows something, like, yo, go read it, go Google it, go understand it. Don't just go by no theories, because I've seen people have to pay the ultimate price because they were going by what 10 other people told them you can do. So, nah.
Yeah, and it's always going to be me that get caught. Right. Look, yes. I got the bad luck.
You be the one.
Right? Yeah, I be the one.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of luck. I can't. I just don't.
I have been audited more than once. Not fun.
Same.
So.
Same.
You know.
Why is all the broke ones that just be audited and got to pay all this back? Like, what?
Millionaires don't have to pay. Don't be paying nothing.
Because there's a difference between being broke and poor.
Set up.
That's why. When you're poor, there's still some sort of like possibly loophole, benefit, right? When you broke, you're still on that line.
You're still on that line, but like
you can't.
Because middle class is a very wide spectrum of income.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like if the poverty line is right here and middle class starts right here,
you can be.
That's it.
It's one of those things you learn, I feel like, as you become more and more an adult, to be more in tune with your finances. And they don't teach it in school for us to learn. We always manage it through trial and error.
At least like an intro to taxes, something like senior year of high school or
something.
College, something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody remember the first time they kind of came up on taxes? Anybody ever came up on it?
Yeah.
How'd you feel? How was that spring?
Oh, it's nice.
You had your daughter after that?
I know. This was in my 20s.
Oh, yeah. This
when
is what,
young,
yeah.
Free. Oh, that was, yeah. That was when I used to come
home. Young, wild, and free
star? When I wasn't making anything.
Right. Yeah, that's when I'm like, ooh, I like Texas. Listen, exactly. I damn. That's such a memory from so long ago that it just feels weird being excited about tax season. Like, God, but it felt great.
Like, first jobs out of college, like, I didn't even have to pay to get them prepared.
Right, didn't have to pay to get them prepared. Got mad bread back. I'm like, where did these days go? Huh?
You were looking at the situation like, why everybody hate taxes?
Right.
I love it.
I hate them now. Hate.
Yeah, did anybody ever have any like conversations coming up financially with your parents to even prepare yourself for it? Jonathan, you.
No, see, and that's the thing. You know, I always say this, being first generation, my family they were learning, you know, shit while I was supposed to be learning, you know? So unfortunately, like with taxes or credit, all that, I wasn't really taught that, you know, which should, like, going back to what we said, I wish that the schools actually did teach us about these things that, you know, if your parents did not know too much about it or weren't following what they should have been doing, you know, like, then the schools would actually teach you about what you're going to have to deal with in life as an adult. Like, it makes no sense to me that I was learning about shit. I can't even tell you the subject, you know, like, what,
right,
you know,
right.
So that just goes back to show that, like, it's all a setup. Like, they don't care about what the fuck you've got to do.
American school system teaching something useful?
Listen,
what?
Like, it makes no sense. So, yeah. And you know, I got screwed.
Really?
Yeah. When I went to Howard, actually, a tax lady had claimed my tuition twice.
Ooh.
And I had no idea.
Wait, how did I
claim my tuition twice? And I had no idea. And then, of course, when everything was falling on my head, like, I had probably the worst year ever in 2014 when I first moved here. Everything happened. My car broke down. Sheesh. Got hit by a hit and run right after.
Oh,
I got
goodness.
It fixed. My uncle passed. I was moving from DC to New York. Had no job. It was like literally the worst. And what can happen when the worst happens? Something even more worse. Yeah. So that's when I got audited. They found out that they claimed the tuition twice. Had no idea. They froze my account. They basically said that we're taking everything. And it was just like, God.
So to my friend, she had a business that made lots of money, but it happened so fast. And like, she, I don't know what the specifics were, but she wasn't taking care of her taxes. Like, she was underpaying or something.
Mm.
And the government was like, you know what? We're just going to empty your accounts out. That's exactly what they did to her. They were garnishing her accounts.
Godly.
And, yeah.
These are some scary stories. This is a scary way to start a podcast.
Yeah, y'all. Listen. Yeah. Well, go get your taxes done, like you said.
Tax people,
yeah,
taxes
right.
are so complex that they might make mistakes, too.
And that's what happened. That's what happened to me.
No, that's true. And the thing that's so ill about it is that when you catch the mistake and you try to fight it, we were talking about this off mic, it's the attitude with customer service as if you're begging for something that you're old.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people, they feel their pride when it comes to that. Because I know when I speak to people from like my grandmother generation, whatever, one of the biggest things they had was like pride, not admitting what you don't know, don't want to be taken advantage of and things of that nature. But you really do got to go into the situation. I always like to say the more you admit you don't know, the better off you're able to learn.
Well, I want to take that, not to go completely left, but like we're talking about Minority Health Month, right? And it's interesting that you said that.
What is Minority Health Month?
I've never even heard of that.
You never heard that, son?
No.
A minority.
Yeah, me either.
And I was just talking about the HIV/AIDS, but no, I'm going to look it up. But it's interesting that you mentioned like pride keeping people from admitting things or having certain conversations. Like, we got to let that go. Like, we really, really.
I get it to a certain degree. We do got to let it go. I mean, one of the things that shedded me when it came to pride was, and Yonda, you can relate to this, when you went to Howard, you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, yeah. It's actually Minority Health Month right now. It's
right now? Wait. I thought we were celebrating Women's History Month.
But it's in April. April is.
Oh, my fault. I'll be getting my months confused. Because I'll be looking for the tax extensions.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's June or.
Oh, yeah. It's Taxes Minority Health Month.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And I mean, when they say minorities,
taxes can take a toll on your mental health, too.
It's been taking a toll on mine. That's what we're talking about.
Hello.
So the origin of it or whatever, I mean, does that include, is that one of them situations that it started off it being for black people, but then it became minority? Or was
it
always minority?
It's probably one of those new, because like, you know, every time you turn around, it's like a new National Chicken Day. Or
wait,
you there's a National
You said
Chicken
National
Day.
Chicken Day?
There's absolutely
Yes,
a
there's
Chicken
absolutely, because I remember.
It has it was, to be summertime, cookout time.
I forget
I
when
know,
it was.
It once I get Minority Health Month together. Minority Health Month. Yeah,
National Chicken Day, yo.
Disparities that continue to affect people. I've been struggling with my blood pressure, so that is definitely something that runs in my family. Mm-hmm. Blood pressure, diabetes on both sides. Mm. And you know, I tweeted about that, about the blood pressure thing, and how I've been going to different doctors, and it's always like they'll either say, "Oh, it's slightly high," or "It's borderline," but like, no one says anything, like, so how do I manage?
Yeah,
one doctor
that's
was
true.
Like, cut your salt intake. Okay, that's a fair thing to say, but we didn't even have a conversation about how I eat.
Yeah,
like, you don't even know that, one, eating is a whole, I definitely have an eating disorder. That's a whole other thing. I'm not going to go into that, but, you know, we didn't have this discussion. She's just like, cut your salt intake. You just assume that I just eat a bunch of,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, so,
So is it mostly about checking for our health during that time?
Checking for our health and like having conversations with other people. Someone actually slid in my DMs and was like, "Hey, I was having a similar," and it was a black woman too. She's like, "I was having a similar experience to you with the health, with the blood pressure," and she gave me some supplements that I should try.
Nice.
I'm not going to say it on air, but we can have these conversations off air. And I do feel like one of the supplements she suggested is helping, because I noticed a downward trend in my blood pressure. One of the doctors I went to actually gave me a home blood pressure monitor, so that's been helpful. But it's kind of like, if you live on this earth, this life, like, it's hard to keep blood pressure under control.
Well, that's actually in the States, because when I went to Ethiopia, was there for 3 weeks. When I tell you, my body has never felt the way it felt. Oh, like, it felt so good with the organic food. Chicken eggs were the size of like smaller than golf balls, and like super yellow.
Oh, yellow.
Like, when it looks like they have
that
food. The bright, the fruit, everything. And literally 2 days after coming back to the States, my body shut down, like constipated and all kinds. It was just really bad.
Wait, so you didn't have any problems in the transition going over there?
No,
but you had problems in the transition coming back.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I was working out big time out here and like dieting. So like, I was so nervous because I was eating so much out there in Ethiopia. And my aunt was like, "Do you see me?" She was like, she's like a stick. And, you know, they all have servants out there. So the servants literally make meals all day. That's all they do.
Fresh meals all day.
Yes. And I was like, "I can't be eating this much, but it's so good." She was like, "Just keep
and
on
you're
eating.
Like, oh,
you're
it's
good."
Carbs. It's carbs.
Yeah,
like,
literally
no, but-
saying that. And I came back here. I, like I said, never ate as much as I ate out there. And then I came back here, weighed myself. I lost 5 pounds. Like, I thought I was going to come back gaining like 15.
That was my experience with the West African countries I went to. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone was like cooking for us, and it was like, oh my god, stuff is so heavy. Like, it's, yes, it's healthy, but it's like, it's carbs. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. they were like, what?
Right. Because it's all so natural out there. So it's really like, it's actually scary. You know, yeah. like it was really scary. I'm like, you could quote unquote be eating organic shit here, and you're still gonna be in the same boat. It's effed up food out here.
I've seen there was a tweet where a woman went viral. She's from the United States, based in Germany now, like in the military. She talked about how, like, when she was in when she first moved overseas, she was eating kind of the same way, like whatever the European equivalent would be to stuff here, like even something as simple as a box of cereal. Like, she was like, she was eating the same way, and she lost weight without See? Trying.
Yeah.
So
it's bad here. It's so really
what would
bad.
Be something that we would like as
Move back to Africa
when it comes to like, yeah, that means it's YouTube. Y'all got the right pipeline. My pipeline stops at South there. Carolina.
Listen,
and the pineapples. The fruit over there, period. Oh, God. Is
but what's something that we can, yeah, that we would here? Say as far as in just having the awareness? I mean, besides great conversations like this, because but honestly, know, everybody can yeah. go to Egypt.
I don't know. Right.
So what would we?
I don't know. Honestly,
I mean, working out does help, mm-hmm. taking care of our mental health, and then eating as, I guess, as clean as we can. It's not always possible, but like finding a balance, like don't necessarily, because I'm an extremist, like either I'm not eating at all or I'm probably binging on something sugary that I shouldn't be eating, and then I'm like, oh shoot, now I can't ever eat again. Like, it's a whole thing. Yeah. So like finding balance, which is hard, I haven't found struck that balance just yet, but it's been helpful for me to have.
Yeah, and work with a nutritionist too.
Okay.
Yeah. A good one.
A good one. Hopefully your doctor, you know, there's one like paired with your doctor or something.
Let me tell y'all something. The nutritionist before last.
Yikes.
That I was paired with. So when I was pregnant, my doctor paired me with a nutritionist, and she printed out the food pyramid, like the My Plate. It's called My Plate now. And she was like, just make sure you eat more vegetables.
Yeah.
And the last nutritionist that I had was, I just didn't like the way she talked to me. I couldn't figure out, like, is this like a you're infantilizing me because I'm black and you're white kind of thing? I didn't like feeling like that, but I did kind of feel like that. Like, I felt like she was talking down to me, and nobody was really getting to the root of, hey, guys, I have an obvious eating disorder, and like I just told you, I went like 3 days without eating anything, and you're just like, oh, well, you should, like, it was kind of like a brush over.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No one was really like, okay, listening, so what,
and like,
what's the issue yeah. here?
And that's the thing, like, understanding that history and being a part of generations that are just now taking part in going to the doctor. Because I remember generations before me, like my brother, who passed away. He was people who never went to the doctor. They didn't really go to the doctors, like, unless it was actually some sort of harm. So one of the things I can think about is becoming more aware that your family history as much as possible. Because I know my family history has blood pressure and things of that nature. And also to consider that there can be other things that can stress you out other than actual food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, being black, walking around here. Being black when you wake up in the morning, being black when you go to sleep. Yeah, but there's black bills. Black bills are different. You know what I mean? My Verizon has not had a zero balance since I bought my phone. You know what I mean? Things of that nature. You know, I will also advocate for healthy practices amongst yourself when you get up. You know, I'm very much so really big for meditation, even if it's like 5 minutes. But you'd be surprised how having a self-care moment for yourself, even if 45 seconds, you know, those things make the light of a difference. I'm not saying you're going to come out like Creed. You're going to be all buff and six-pack. But you'll be able to start to have more practices that are more about yourself.
Getting sleep. Oh, that's, yeah. That sounds simple, but it's a big one. Because not getting sleep. I will say I had a doctor that really was, like, breaking down sleep science. And he was like, that can impact blood pressure and cholesterol and how your body cleanses and functions. So getting a decent amount of sleep. Establishing rituals where it's like, okay, no more electronics, no more digital anything. I'm winding down. That's a whole other. There's a whole science behind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Creed. So you saw it. So you. Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, I saw it. Anybody else see it? No?
I did not. Yeah.
I read the plot on the movie.
Wow, we are here.
Damn.
I plan to see it.
Okay, has anybody ever seen any of the Creed?
Yes, I've seen. Okay, okay. I've seen the first and the second.
I'm like, because we at least know who Creed is,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
We know.
All right.
Apollo Creed. So, son, honestly, yeah. Rocky IV, I can't watch Rocky IV.
It's hard, especially watching it now.
So sad.
Especially watching it now is I mean, literally, Apollo Creed is the whole big part of the Rocky universe. When you take him out, it is not the same. Yeah. Right. You know, it's the Rocky movies were terrible. You know, without him in it, I mean, even with when we talk about Creed now, it's because of Apollo, the character. You know, when you watch it, but
Apollo Creed,
yeah. But when you watch three, if you was able to watch it, I think it's something not necessarily about the movie itself, because there still might be people who haven't
Creed
seen it.
Creed 3.
Creed 3. But there is something about the relationship that we're seeing right before our eyes with Jonathan Majors and Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
On screen and off.
Like, that's what I'm saying. It's a relationship that's developing afterwards, right? And there's some criticism to how Jonathan Majors is when it comes to the photo shoot that he did for Ebony Magazine and the photo shoot that he did with Michael B. Jordan where they were embracing each other. Mm-hmm. Now, Jonathan, as you being a brother yourself, did you see anything wrong with how they were embracing each other on the photo between them two, or seeing two men like really like love each other in a sense or appreciate each other?
Yeah, I definitely did.
You saw something wrong with it?
Absolutely.
Okay, what did you saw wrong?
Boy, no, I didn't. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that.
That's
the crazy thing about it. You know, like it's almost like, you know, we are always kind of setting ourselves back. You know, this is what we used to see back in the day, you know, when, you know, brothers would be like, hey, my brother, you know, or like talking to my sister, the respect was there, the love was there, and you're not afraid to show it. And
there's images of civil rights icons, like men,
yes,
on each other.
Yes.
Like Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King, all of them.
Literally, like, and I grew up seeing that. I mean, even in Ethiopia, my mom was telling me when I went to go visit, she was like, you're going to see some stuff that you might not really understand. And when she said that, I was like, what the hell is she talking about? And they're men holding hands.
Yeah,
so they hold hands out there. Or they'll sit.
Friends.
Yeah, they're friends. These are men that are friends.
It has
at all. And, you know, see, and that's today in Africa. So to see that, and then to also grow up with images of Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X hugging, or like, you know, black men kissing on the cheek, like the men in our culture, we just like how you do the three kisses, we do it to each other as well. That's like, you know, it's just love. So to see that and them not care about it, because there have been interviews, you know, with Jonathan Majors asking about that and like, you know, talking about the feedback or the backlash that he got from the Ebony photo shoot. Shout out to Ebony Magazine, my other job, by the way. And he's saying, listen, you know, if they talking about it, they talking about it. And, you know, I just think that we need to chill out. We need to chill out on stuff like that, because we need more love like that. We need to start showing the young generation that, you know, we can do this without it being weird.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, do you see something wrong with that star though? Like as a woman, when you see that, because I seen criticism coming from women also too.
Yeah.
Who are like, I don't like to see my men
that,
like
that's
this.
Also how women are affected by patriarchy. Let's make that clear. That is toxic masculinity and affects men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have had personal instances in my own family of like hearing people say things to little boys like, stop that crying, boys don't cry, or like stuff like that. And so that is stuff that I've had to deal with. But no, like, who hates love? Like, why?
Right.
people showing love, like, why does it have to get into like, oh, this is an agenda? What, to be nice to someone that you care for, to show someone that you care for them? Like, I just, now I, you know, I've done work on myself and I've worked through a lot of the things that you're conditioned to believe, but no, it doesn't bother me. I think it's sweet. Like, I love that they have a friendship and they're acting like friends. Like, that's what it is.
So for those of you that did not see the movie
or read about it,
but here's the thing though, it's comparison to the movie, because the movie is dealing with Adonis Creed relationship with an old friend from back in the day. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw it all in the trailer. And the moment he shows up and he sees his old friend, you can see the physical, like, he's like, boom. Like, it's an effect on him. And you know that Damian, who the character Jonathan Majors played, had a role in his life that was significant. And that's something right as black men when we move on in life in general. And it don't always have to be a financial upward, but you when you just move on, there always feels that need of or that obligation of I got to take someone with me, right? Mm-hmm. And then where does that relationship in your brotherhood, where does the line of yes and no and cross, and how much love can I show you, you know, and what am I trying to prove? When some of the things that happen on the street, when brothers kill each other, whatever, a lot of that is trying to showcase who's more of the man, this mm-hmm. ideology of what that man is.
Yeah.
Now, on one end, I'm not going to pretend like I don't know where the source of the criticism comes, because there is a history, especially within this country, of black men being, you know, being bucked down, being beaten down in front of them, and whatever spirit they had being taken from them. But
the insecurity of that,
it's been within our heritage within this country for years, for decades, for generations. But the problem with that is I feel it's the kind of same way when you see a younger generation saying everything is snitching. Mm-hmm. Like everything ain't that, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a history of that. Yes, there's a history of them demasculating right. and this. But that ain't that, right? Jonathan Majors, when he was speaking at Michael B. Jordan's, when he got the Hollywood Walk of Fame, mm-hmm. and he was saying, we were talking in the room for 3 hours and we saw that we linked so well that we just said, yo, let's be friends. And he was like, yeah, let's be friends. I was like, man, when the last time me and another brother just said, let's be friends?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And to see them build on that, I think is a beautiful thing, because how you go from telling us we should stop shooting each other, we should stop killing each other, right? And we should stop doing these things. But then when you see a display of that, you're opposed to it because, I mean, I don't know what else Jonathan Majors got to do. He's playing a boxer. He's getting ready to play a bodybuilder.
Right.
The dude in shots. He played the Curry Brothers back in Detroit, which was Doug Dillers and White Boy Rick. I mean, he's played all of these roles where he's been like the guy.
Yeah.
And yet when he sits on top of a couch because he's wearing some stunner boots.
Have y'all not heard of Prince?
And the Right.
Did y'all see the pictures of the Isley Brothers back there?
Oh, my God. Like superheroes.
Right.
All them funk bands. And
I mean, Superman himself wear his underwear outside. I mean, what are we talking about here as far as how we picking and choosing in that? And I just see that. I get it, man, because with black men, there's a lot of areas you go to in this world where you are devalued.
Even holding his baby and standing behind his woman was seen as like...
But that's what I'm saying. You're going to all these places where you're always feeling like you're devalued. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what it is that these type of men who are upset, or these type of women that are upset, this is the one place where they feel like they're trying to be valued and they feel like it's being taken away from them. And it's not. And to what you were saying about A$AP Rocky... walking behind Rihanna, I don't know where she's supposed to walk behind. I don't mind walking around behind Rihanna.
The shoot was about Rihanna. Like, you know, that's why I say we are a part of the problem. We are a part of the problem. Like, us putting that type of narrative out and like saying, oh, this is what it's always, oh, they're trying to demasculate the black man and all that. I think we are a part of the problem. Like, it's not about that. I feel like we find an issue about everything.
Why do you care so much too about another man's masculinity or sexuality?
I ain't gonna lie to you. Some of this stuff I think is Russian bots or Rock Nation bots that come out of nowhere to cause discourse.
Rock Nation bots.
I do, man, because
it could be. No, I agree.
Some of this stuff, it comes out of nowhere, right? Yeah. Like when the whole like,
there's definitely a disinformation campaign.
Yo, whole.
I mean, are you said
if you buy McDonald's for my kid, you need to buy for everybody. Like, where did it come from?
If you're a man and
like,
you get Rihanna pregnant.
Right.
And
then, what
are we talking about here? It's like, this stuff be coming out of nowhere, and then next thing you know, it's all over your timeline, whether you follow somebody or not.
It's bots, and then, like, that shock value. Unfortunately, that's what gets attention, that rage baiting. Mm-hmm. When you make people mad, that's what they want to see, or that's what they'll gravitate towards. As much as people will say they want positivity, it's always the negative that gets the attention. And so I think it's a combination of bots and then, like, people who just maybe they didn't get loved on enough. And so they get online and they need attention. So I was like, let me say something crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think there's an accountability of we have to take when we participate in this madness of it and we start dissecting it the way we do. Because, I mean, listen, if we're going to be truthful, there was only a period of time where men were dressing over baggy, especially in black culture, mm-hmm. where they were dressing extra masculine. Because when you go back in history and you look back, them brothers was wearing capes.
Right.
Like, I was watching a documentary on the Roosevelts, and they were talking about, like, when you look at the baby pictures in the 1800s, all of the babies were like, they all look like ruffled. They all like women.
The boys
were wearing dresses. And all of this stuff was constructed for marketing so that they can make money off of it. And then somehow it became a part of our identity, you know, in the sense of like, oh, a man wears this and who wears the pants and all of that. And none of that has anything to do with are you a good person or not?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the part that I'm trying to understand. Like, well, what does it got to do with you being a good person in, and what role that should be playing all of that? Like, it has nothing to do with being a good person. Now, and if you get a chance to see Creed, actually, Creed 3, it is a good display of that relationship between brothers. Because I come from a family where I wasn't allowed to ask how my uncle was related. My uncle Sam was my uncle Sam. I don't know how it's related. You know what I mean? It was, I had to go to another place when I went to Howard, and there are people like, oh no, this is our family. This is our friend we've been knowing for years. Okay. In my family household, when my grandma said, this is your auntie, that's your auntie.
That's
and
it.
You didn't ask no questions on that.
That's it.
So when someone was your brother, that's your brother, right? Yeah. Like, you live and you die for that. And when I see that on film, and then I see that off film with the relationship that they're building, we're seeing something that is beautiful develop in front of our eyes. I was too young to see the relationship between Spike Lee and Denzel Washington develop, right? But I'm watching this. I'm like, yo, we should be applauding this. And to Yonatan's point, I'm seeing just the criticism. I'm seeing these random podcasts that pop up that I ain't pay for. Pop up on my timeline.
Right.
About men and everything. And it's just like, it's ridiculous. Meanwhile, the movie made $100 million
crazy,
on the weekend.
Crazy.
I'm sorry. It was.
Oh, Jonathan Majors?
I was just talking about,
it was boss.
For real.
It was boss, man. I mean, you know, you sitting on top of a, on the bench, you know, with the pink mink.
Right.
And you got your legs crossed. Listen. You know, I used to sit on top of the bench back in the day when we used to work
corners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just saying how, like, I was like, yeah, you know, Jonathan Majors doesn't necessarily, like, I love that women are attracted to him. I'm not necessarily that person. It's like, oh, yeah, he's fine. But he is fine. Like, it's something about his spirit.
Yeah.
I felt like the brother was throwing roses to my girl. Like, if I had a girl, if I had a girl and she was next to me, we opened up the bag. I felt like he was moving me out the way.
Right.
He was like, yeah. He's that guy.
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
It would be on some, like, that Dracula kind of, like, all the women in the room is like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. He'll convince me to go get something.
But do you think he's cute or not? It's something about his aura, his energy. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's there.
Yeah, that's.
You got to have a lot of confidence, too, to pull that off. And he does. So.
Yeah, I mean, Yonatan, you are a well-dressed guy who come with your confidence. Do you feel that kind of pressure, you personally, when it comes to stuff like that?
Yeah, for sure.
And we know people be in your DMs.
They do. But, you know, it's you know, it comes with the territory. You know, I feel like I had to grow to this confidence, you know, to this level of confidence. And I'm still growing. You know, because there's stuff that my stylist will pass to me and I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. But, like, you know, that's the beauty about it. So, like, to see Jonathan Majors, we were just talking about the old pictures of him in college, and to see him go from that, you know, person and evolve into this amazing artist now, and to see that confidence level, to see him being able to embrace another brother like he's been doing with Michael B. Jordan, it's a beautiful thing. So, once you get to that place where you be like, I don't give a damn about what other people say, that, look, just keep on going from there. And I think, you know, because I'm getting to that spot.
So would you have pulled a Michael B. Jordan on the red carpet? Like, if you encountered someone who, like...
Absolutely. Okay. And I will.
I can see you doing it kind
of
like...
You're talking about this for context, the corny guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it. Like, the way he did it is kind of like he was really trying to, you know, push up, like he's trying to check her. I would have did it in a funny way to be like, saying, look at me now. You know what I mean? Because I've done that at our...
I mean, it's cathartic.
Yeah, I did it at my, our you know, school reunion, our class reunions. But it's all jokes. And, you know, it's like we were kids at the time, so.
Yeah, there's a line between bullying and this is just jokes.
Right, right.
I had a guy try to bully me for my complexion.
Oh, snap.
Not only was he the dumbest person in the class because he was 13 in the sixth grade.
Oh, wow.
Maybe fifth grade.
Damn.
But it was a thing. Like, he always would, like, try to bully me. And then I was never someone, like, if you try to bully me, I got it back for you.
Oh, really?
So people go, oh, I got into a
nice.
Lot of fights.
Well, that's nice, though.
And any of my family watching is probably like, really? No, just know I had teachers that cared enough not to suspend me or anything. But
that's
anyway,
what's up.
So, yeah, me and this kid would go back and forth a lot. Like, he would just start with me out the blue. And his comeback was always something about, that's why you're the darkest person in the class.
Wow.
So, like, it was always that.
Right.
And my comeback was, I'd rather be dark than stupid. So, you know, that was what he could say. But long story short, ran into him probably, like, after college. And, like, I was going to keep walking. I didn't know what the vibe was. Because I'm like, you had, like, you didn't like me. this wasn't no, oh, that's just Kitty. No, like, you act like you really didn't like me. Mm. Long story short, he was like, oh, I'm so proud of you. Great, good. You know, let's exchange numbers. Why? Like, I literally was like, why? And he was like, yo, we need to connect. You know, I think you look fine. You, like, I look good. All okay.
I was about to say, he probably liked you.
So that's, you like chocolate now?
Yeah.
I always like chocolate.
He probably always did.
I always, you know.
I mean, you know, that's how they.
Listen to the Nestle.
Yeah.
Don't be a jerk to people.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah,
don't.
But I do think there is a line, though, between, we do, there is a line between, yo, how this affects you versus how I see it. Like, I might see it as, oh, you should be over that. But the reality is it affected that person.
Yeah, it did. Right.
And oftentimes, coming back to the conversation we were having about the men thing, oftentimes with men, what I see is that it's more of a, you should be over that. Because if Michael B. Jordan was Michelle Jordan, it would have been like, that's her right.
Right.
And they would have been championing it. But when that's, it comes to black real. Men, there's this attitude or this perception that you're supposed to just take. And you're supposed to respond back with this grace that you wasn't necessarily given. I wasn't there to witness what happened when he was in middle school. So I don't know how that affect, right? And I didn't look at the tone. I just saw he mentioned it. And first thing I said to myself was like, yo, his eyes is everywhere. Because that it's not like it was on a popular podcast, respectfully.
Right.
It's not like it was a viral moment before then. Like, people had to go back and look at that. So I was like, yo, this brother's eyes is everywhere. Like, somebody really brought this to him. He got some people. So he might be watching this right
that's
now.
You know that's probably what it was. Yeah.
Because she did the interview clip. I will say, I think people took it a little far. But again, it is.
They did take it too far.
Confront a bully. But people were turning it into stuff that it's not. Yeah. Like, see, that's what happens when all you chicks think y'all all that and y'all don't go for the corny. I'm the girl that, well, first of all, I didn't really date, but if I was, it was always going to be somebody that was quote unquote nerdy or corny. Mm-hmm. I never was into like there's this idea that, oh, women like the tough guy, the hood guy or whatever. And so I think people were projecting that onto the interviewer. But at the same time, he probably was corny.
Right.
Like, it just sound like some funny kids. It just sound like some funny kid stuff. There's a thin line between bullying, just like torturing someone to the point where they want to take their life and just all in fun. Come on. What 12, 13, 14-year-old is not going to have fun with, oh, your name is Michael B. Jordan, ha, 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 ha. Like,
Michael Jordan, yeah.
Now, I will say, if the headshot thing, I don't know what the specifics were. Like, was he going around, like, look at my headshot, look at,
I
like,
mean, if he was,
that's weird.
If that he was, weird. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. But I also am weird, and I also was a nerd, and I also believed in myself, you know, to where I would have, if I had headshots when I was younger, I probably would have did the same thing, you know? Like, so.
Yeah. Man, he had a vision. He was in high school. Yep. He was on The Wire while he was a teenager. So he was auditioning. So hey, I mean, but I can't knock him for calling her out. Like, it was probably cathartic for him. We don't know what that made him feel. It clearly made him feel some type of way.
Yeah, so. And we don't know what the intentions could have been behind that also too, because when it comes to stuff like that, there has been a history though. As all of this connects, right? There's been a history of black men and how they're portrayed and what they're seen as, what they should respond to, what they should not respond to. Some of it is healthy criticism. Some of it is like, yo, y'all doing too much. Y'all piling way on and too much into this.
Like, people were projecting their own issues.
Yeah, right. And that's where it comes down to. Like, if you had issues where you felt like the girl didn't choose you because she chose someone else and you're still harboring that now, you're the one that probably needs to go seek help more than Michael B. Jordan, because your response to that.
I don't know if you saw it. That was circulating. It was this comic where it was like black girl with like some like super buff thugged out guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. That resurfaces like every 3 years.
Yeah, right, right.
And sometimes they put Drake face on it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They did it with Rihanna. So they put it on Michael. So Michael B. Jordan then became the guy that was like, you know, he had all things.
I don't.
And I'm like, y'all, that you just need therapy. Like, this ain't even funny. Like, this is sad. Like, you need therapy.
I don't know what that's about. We know what it's about. It's a lot of brothers not healing. But, you know, Jonathan, I applaud you for sharing that, because, yo, when I see you, I'll be like, yo, dude, fly. Right.
Yeah.
But I can only imagine what the stereotype might be of someone seeing that, and what you probably deal with a day, but in your journey to even get to this level.
Yeah, yeah.
So I applaud you for that. You know what I'm saying? Because for me, I'm just like, yo, I just ain't got options like that.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I think a lot of brothers who might see that and feel that way is because it always starts off with jealousy.
Jonathan unleashes his DMs.
Oh. Now that would be a whole nother show.
Because I've had people asking about you, and I'm just like, mind your business.
Oh.
I'm not in the business of hooking anybody up. So I just be like, like, mind your business. Slide into his skin.
I just be like, it's my homie Jazzy. You know what I'm saying? I just be like, homie Jazzy. Like, homie Jazzy. Like, look how he moved. Like, when I first met him, he glided into the day. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, I was like, yo, how can I get some, like, how can I smooth into the door?
And a lot of people had an awkward phase in middle school, junior. Oof. The people that were popular then, they just peaked early. So yeah.
I feel like we should all share pictures, you know, post them.
Possibly, you know what I mean? Possibly in that, man. I mean, when I think back, I don't know if I was any guy. Like, I really don't know. I'm not even trying to be on it. I don't know if I was corny. I don't know what I was because I was so in my own element. You know what I mean? And this is on topic of how we was getting into it. I was that hip hop kid, you know what I mean? So my whole thing was Source magazines and what I'm reading and who got the latest bars and, you know, what album I'm about to buy. I was so into the culture and that I didn't recognize how someone else perceived me and what they was teasing me about. You know what I mean? Because if you weren't going to say it to my face, you know, that had to be a whole nother situation. I wasn't going to always be every volunteer.
Yeah.
You know? So I say that as we're leaning into the hip hop 50.
Yeah.
You know I mean, I brought my shirt out.
I see. West Coast. Look, listen.
Right.
Come on. You already know. I seen that. I was like, all right.
The shirt. He wasn't looking at the pecs. You know what I'm saying?
The shirt. It's all about the shirt, man.
All about the shirt. So, yeah, you know, we hip hop 50th anniversary is coming up, which go to show you that hip hop is still a young genre.
Yes.
It is extremely young. I mean, only 50.
Yeah.
Like 73.
Yeah, there are people who are alive that witness its birth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? In that, when we think about hip hop celebrating its 50, what's the first thing that comes to everybody's mind when you hear that number?
That it's amazing that the genre has become what it's become. Like 50, it's still young, but that's also a healthy enough amount of time that it's like, okay, no, this is real. This is a culture, and you see it everywhere. There, you know, there was when it was first coming up. People didn't believe in it. People thought it was even older black elders were like, oh, we don't want to play this on the radio. Or like, what are y'all doing? What is this Jungle Bunny? You know, but now it's here. I don't know if it's thriving. I guess it depends on who you ask. Mm-hmm. We could have this is a whole other discussion about the state of hip hop now, but it has come a long way. I'm happy that it seems easier to make money. And I think now, because we're in a culture where you can be an independent artist, hopefully we're headed in a direction where less artists are being taken advantage of.
I think we are.
I can see that.
Yeah. What were y'all first hip-hop albums that you guys got? Ooh. You remember?
Man,
my mother had, it wasn't mine, my mother had vinyl. She had a vinyl collection.
Ooh.
She had Trans Europe Express. I can't think of the group, but the song was like Trans Europe Express, and it was like a popular breakdance song. And so I grew up in Harlem, so I remember witnessing they would break out like the cardboard and be pop locking and all that stuff. I used to try to copy. I never figured out. But Trans Europe Express, that was the first time any kind of hip hop, anything came onto my mind. I don't know if you would call that hip hop. It kind of was, but it was, I don't know. Moving on, another early artist, LL Cool J. I've talked about.
Oh yes.
Okay. My early crush, okay. LL Cool J.
Yes. Okay.
I think the first time I remember LL Cool J coming on my mind was the "I Need Love" video, and we'll leave that. That was probably like. I don't know.
I can't remember necessarily the first like purchase or first album, but I can definitely tell the first album that was coming across my radar in elementary school. Everybody was passing around the tape, and that was DJ Quick as a name.
Woo!
Quick as a name. You know what I mean? Like that tape was being passed around.
Yeah.
We're like 8, 9 years old, and everybody, yo, you heard that quick? And we're like, I'm like, what? And when I played it, the first song was called Sweet Black, right? And I remember playing that in my house, and then my mother comes out her room rapping the second verse.
What? Yo, not
as she was putting clothes up. Like, she wasn't like trying to be cool. She was like, blah, 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 blah. And she was putting clothes up, and then she left. And I remember I was like, oh,
yo,
snap, right?
That's
and
wild.
So, like, my experience with hip hop, when I think about Hip Hop 50, I think about how fortunate I was to have the household I had. Because I had what I like to call like stop eject lessons, meaning a song would be played in the car when I'm with my mother, and then she'll stop me like, yo, you know what that word means? And I'd be like, nah. And she'll break it down to me. And she'll break down to me the scenarios and what something means and things like that. So I always had this very introspective view of what I was listening to. Her perspective was two things. I don't want you to be dumb out in the streets, and you ain't gonna come here saying you did something and you ain't know what you was doing. You gonna always know what you're doing. So when some of my friends, when we get in trouble, and some of my friends would say something like, oh, I'm just going to, like, tell my mom this. Yeah. I knew my ass whooping was coming.
Yeah.
Because I knew what I was doing. I knew the trouble because that was our relationship. That was our bonding. She would listen to something, and she would say, do you know what he talking about when he talk about this? Do you know what a kilo is? And this and this and this. And then we didn't have Google, so she'll send me to the Encyclopedia Britannica. Right. And make me read what these things were.
That's so dope.
And all of these things. So when I think about Hip Hop 50, I think about, like, that kind of perspective. And it sounds cliche, but hip-hop really did save my life. If it wasn't for me hearing what they were saying on record, because back then when a rapper would talk about them doing dirt, they always rapped that the last verse was always the consequence. If anything I can criticize in today's era, it's just, you just don't hear the consequence. Mm-hmm. It's just, I got this money for selling drugs and I'm still living. Yeah. But back then, it would be like, I got this money for selling, it was a story. I got the money. No, I start off broke. I got the money, and then at the end, I went to jail.
Yeah.
So I always heard the last ending of it, and it really saved my life when it came to that. So when I think about that, I think about all those lessons in entertainment that while being entertained, you know, with the culture itself.
That's so dope.
Yeah.
My first, I mean, I didn't buy it, but got it through, like, cousins or whatever, and obviously you guys know I'm from L.A., so it was the Chronic album, 92, and that was, like, I don't know, it, like, the nostalgic feeling I get from, you know, just, like, old school L.A., like, the shit that y'all seen in Boys in the Hood and Friday and stuff like that. Like, that was how I grew up.
I remember meeting someone from L.A. for the first time. I think it was, like,
Star always meets
you. I love her stories. I'll be ready too.
Like, I met Santa Claus one time in July. Right. Yeah, lost weight.
Because you said that, right? And, like, I just remember she had the accent. Yeah. And we'd be like, oh my God, they really talk like that. It was like,
I know. Whenever I go back home, they're like, you're sounding a little too New Yorker. Because I'll be like, coffee now. They'll be like, it's coffee, all right? Stop playing. Yeah, the ERs. Yeah.
But that's a great album for you to start with because that album chronicled the LA riots of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I didn't even know until I got older that some of the interludes was coming from real audio. Yeah. Like real people talking. So, and you so lived that experience.
I did. I did. I remember it. I remember all of that. Like Rodney King, like as it was happening, I remember watching the news with my family. So, you know, all of that, it literally shaped my childhood as well. So, you know, that's. It's crazy. It's crazy how hip hop can really just have an effect on you different ways. You know what I mean? Like how you learned, you know, from like what they were saying for you, you know, like the culture where you're from. That's how you, you know, you were birthed in it. For me, the stuff that was happening within the Black culture in LA, the riots and whatnot, which I vividly remember and I have a horrible memory, you know, but little stuff like that, because I remember we was rapping about that. The people was, you know, talking about that, that's when, you know, we actually had substance in our songs.
Rest in peace, Dave from De La Soul.
Yes. Rest in peace. I mean, it was a bittersweet that whole week because De La Soul, their music went streaming, which has not been available for streaming, which I didn't even realize until like a few years ago. Yeah. So their albums went streaming, and then Dave passed away, and so it's impact like that. When you think about the fact that we're at that level
what
there.
What cruise would y'all have been in? Because, like, I feel like Native Tongue, like De La Soul, Queen Latifah, Tribe Called Quest, that crew was, like, the first crew that really made me feel like I belonged in hip-hop. Before, I felt like a spectator. Like, okay, all these, like, guys swaggering stuff. But they were, like, the crew of, like, I guess they, like, called themselves the Flower Children, right? Like
Daisy Crew.
The Daisy Crew.
Mm-hmm. They just had the Daisy Show not too long ago. Yeah.
I felt like, look at these blurs. Like, I belong here. So I would say Native Tongue, or when I was in high school, you couldn't tell me I wasn't going to be down with, like, Missy and Timberland.
Oh, that's that was literally.
What crew?
Yeah.
Y'all, you want to go?
For me, personally, I would Missy and Timberland crew for sure because I love the whole Genuine and all the, you know what I mean? That whole crew. But
shout out to Aaliyah. She the one.
Right.
Aaliyah is the one who introduced y'all.
Yeah, right, right. My pops, Elgin Lumpkin. but I feel like I would have always wanted to be like the little brother in N.W.A. Like, you know, because that's how, but like those are how like my big brothers were, you know. In LA and in Long Beach, that they were like the ones that kind of took care of us, you know, when they would see, you know, us getting bullied or whatever, like, you know, they had our backs. So Yeah, NWA, like those are the guys I do remember growing up in Long Beach and LA.
Yeah, as far as crew, if I can just say real quick, I had different stages of my life, and growing up in Detroit, I didn't realize how much of a melting pot we were because we wasn't biased. Mm-hmm. So you would find a crew of people that was so West Coast, and you would find a crew of people that was so East. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know the bias really existed until I came to college, and I would have people be like, "Yeah, I don't buy this type of record."
That's crazy.
And I was like, "What?" Because we bought everything. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. As far as crew that I would probably be attached to, I don't know. It depends on what stage in my life, because it would be a mixture of Woo. It'd be a mixture of the NWA era. Mm-hmm. But when I became like a young adult, like 18, is when I really appreciated Native Tongues. Mm-hmm. When I was a child, I didn't necessarily appreciate them as much because I was listening to what was going on outside my front steps. Okay, so I was gravitating toward anything that was like the Menace of Society era and that kind of thing. I was gravitating towards that. But when I got older, I started to really appreciate them. Violators, you know what I mean? And everything that they you know, Tribe Called Quest, I became like a real, real big fan of theirs in that sense. So, yeah. Really
so that kind of helped.
Yeah. Rest in peace to Chris Lightly. Chris Lightly.
Right.
Reminds you of NWA. So mm-hmm. that was kind of me too. Like the older people that I was around, they were all into Native Tongues heavy. And even that could be regional in a sense. Like I know they were popular across the board, but remember there was that whole De La Soul is Dead period where they were kind of making not making fun of, but like highlighting how there was a shift in hip hop toward the hardcore, which was when NWA started to rise and like bring about the gangster rap, and people were like, "Oh, De La Soul is corny. We don't want that." So, but okay, we gotta wrap this up.
Yes.
I just want to say, in college, I definitely was hanging around a bunch of Dipset members, unofficial members.
Oh,
unofficial members. I was definitely hanging around a bunch of unofficial members.
Yeah.
That's all I'm gonna say. I wasn't a part of it, but all those long white T-shirt dresses that I was around.
Hilarious.
That's all I'm gonna say before we go. Man. So yeah.
I hated that phase. Oh my God! Let's never bring back long triple-size T-shirts.
Man, my Shaka tees. I used to wear that 3X tall.
But this was dope, man. I missed y'all. I didn't realize how much I missed y'all.
Don't do that again.
I won't do it again, man. Yeah. I'll be back. You know, I'll be here, and I'll be with y'all, and I appreciate it. You know, Jonathan, much blessings up to you.
Thank
your social medias and everything is
Jonathan Elias TV. That's everything.
Mm-hmm. Star Rock.
Star with two R's, rock, R-O-C-K-U-E, underscore in the middle, star underscore rock. You can find me.
All right. As usual, mine is at J Hall Society. Be blessed with successful. This has been the AURN Podcast. Talk to you soon.
Until next time.
Peace.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.